Very exciting after a Chazak, Chazak, Venit Chazak last week, finishing Sefer Shmos, we're on to Sefer Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra opens up. Vayikra el Moshe, Vaydaber Hashem alav Moel Moed Lemor. He called to Moshe, he, capital H, called to Moshe, and he spoke to him from the tent of Moed, from the tent of meetings. It's those of you that are sensitive to visuals will know that if you open up a Sefer Torah, you'll pick up on it right away, and some Chumashim, they have it as well, not in this one, that the Aleph in the Vayikra, the last letter, is a small Aleph. And a lot has been written about the small Aleph and what it may signify. So let's just talk about it in two quick ideas about the little Aleph. Both pivot around the same explanation of the little Aleph, but taking it in different directions. The little Aleph represents chinuch. It's davar sheyadua. Most often in the Talmud Torah, they started Sefer Vayikra as the starting point of all Jewish education. Right, the word Aleph, the word Aleph, in fact, not the letter, just but the word Aleph means to train. Alfa chokhma. Aleph means to train. So the Aleph represents chinuch. So why is it that Sefer Vayikra is the starting point of all chinuch? So in the Sefer Ma'ayana Shel Torah, he gives the following explanation. He says that oftentimes we enter into the world of education and we think that it's going to be a walk in the park. You know, it's kind of scripted for us. You go and you go to school and it just kind of happens. And what the Torah is trying to teach us is that chinuch comes with sacrifices. If you really want to have meaningful chinuch, you have to recognize that it's going to be fraught with sacrifice. It's not going to be easy, right? Not mitzad the parents that have to parent, and not mitzad the Talmud himself, who is going to be sitting in the shir and learning. Both are going to have to sacrifice. Your desire might not be to sit in class all day, and it's a sacrifice to sometimes miss out on certain exciting things because you have a homework assignment, and it's a sacrifice for the parents to have to give up on a family vacation because Jewish education costs a lot of money. But it's put specifically here in Sefer Vayikra to teach us that education is fraught with sacrifice, and the payoff at the end is great. Rav Yerucham was mentioned this week by Rav Chaim Eisenstein of Yerucham, when people would come to him for Advar Torah, not when he would give large shiurim in the yeshiva, but when people would ask him for Advar Torah, he would ask people to pay money. He would ask them to sacrifice a little bit of themselves. And it's slightly different than Rav Eisenstein, is that the reason why he did that is because he knew that the only way education sticks with a person, it comes with a little bit of sacrifice. My brother-in-law for many years ran NCSY. He was the international director of NCSY, and he once told me that no matter what, even if a kid is in desperate need of scholarship, they always make sure to ask the child for a little bit of money. Even if it's just $5 to join the Shabbaton, because he needs to feel like he's invested in it. He needs to feel like he's sacrificing. If you don't feel the sacrifice, then you don't really invest it. You don't care. All right, take it or leave it. Sacrifice is part of chinuch, and it's an important part of chinuch because it really helps us take it seriously and put our all into it. If it were not fraught with sacrifice, it would be meaningless and insignificant. Okay? The second reason why the Aleph is small, and here it really relates much more to the Aleph than just to the concept of chinuch, is to teach us that in order to have chinuch, in order to train yourself, you need to make yourself small. The Mishnah in Perkei Avos, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph, Mishnah Aleph says, Eizehu chacham, who is the wise person? Halomed mikol adam. Right? Oftentimes we think to ourselves, there's only a certain cadre of people that I can learn from. Teachers that are older than me and wiser than me, professors and doctors, but somebody that's my peer or somebody that's younger than me or less educated than I am, you know, what can I possibly learn from them? And the answer is that there's something to be learned. Hachacham lomed mikol adam, learns from everyone. The Magen Mezrich used to say you can learn even from a baby. The baby always smiles. You should learn from a baby to always smile.
Yeah.
Right? A baby is never idle. Always trying to move around, always moving his arms. You should learn from a baby to never be idle. So the baby cries when it wants what, when it wants something. You should learn from a baby that when you're turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with your heart, and you should feel it, be emotional about it, cry about it. You can learn even from a baby. Everything and everyone has something to offer us. And the sooner we'll wise up to that idea, the more chacham we will be. Rav Abraham Tversky, who's also a doctor and a world-renowned psychiatrist, had the following to say once, the following story. When he was beginning his training to become a psychiatrist, his internship, and as he was finishing up his education, beginning his internship, so a family member or a family friend, I don't exactly know, asked him for a referral for a doctor. They were having some problems, and Dr. Tversky referred them to a certain expert in the field who had written textbooks on the subject. And one day, he gets a phone call, and he picks up, hello, and then the end of the line is the doctor that he referred to, the renowned doctor who had written the textbook, and he says, is this Abraham Tversky? He says, yes. I wanted to ask you about the patient that you referred to me. So Rabbi Dr. Tversky said back to the psychiatrist, he said to the psychiatrist, you don't understand, I'm only an intern. I am not yet a fully licensed psychiatrist. He said, so what? You know the patient better than I do. I might have written the textbook, but I don't know the patient. Of course, your insight into this case is going to be valuable to me. And without it, I can't possibly hope to treat the patient, you know. And there was a lesson there, that even the person that wrote the textbook is seeking to, and that's probably why he's good enough to write a textbook, because he's always seeking for other people's advice and help, and that's the way we should be as well. If we really want to succeed, if we really want to be able to make it in chinuch, to get the most out of our education, we have to be open to learn from every single individual. Okay. In Pasuk Beis, we have the following. Daber al bnei Yisrael, speak to the people of Israel, v'amarta alehem, and say to them, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban la'ashem, mina behema, mina bakar, mina tzon, takriv et korbanchem. An Adam, a human, when he sacrifices, it can be from a behema, from an animal, you know, from different types of animals, behema, a bakar, or tzon. It's an odd use over here, the word Adam. It doesn't come up all that often. More often than not, we would have Ish ki yakriv mekem, Isho Isha. That's really what we should normally have. Over here, suddenly we have the word Adam. It's out of place. So Rashi is sensitive to that. Rashi says, Adam lama ne'amar. Why does it say Adam? It's meant to send us back to Adam Arishon. At the time of Adam Arishon, there was everything in the world belonged to Adam Arishon. He was owner of everything. Which means nothing that he brought, nothing that he did with any of his property was ever considered gezel. He owned it all. And the same way Adam owned whatever it was that he owned, so too when you bring a korban, you should make sure that you own it. You cannot bring a korban that is stolen. That's what Rashi says. But there is another point over here in Adam. Adam says the Sefer Iturei Torah says the following. Adam is Rashi Tevus.
Who says this?
Iturei Torah. Abraham, David, Moshe. Right? The Gemara in Yevamos tells us, Atem kruim Adam, ve'ein umos ha'olam kruim Adam. You, the Jewish people, are referred to as Adam. Gentiles are not referred to as Adam. What does that mean, Gentiles are not referred to as Adam? As I said before, Adam is a very generic term for humans. So they're not human? Is that what you mean to say? So the Torah explains, it's not that we're not, that Gentiles are not human. Of course they're human. And of course they're great. But they don't have Abraham, David, and Moshe. Abraham, the courage, the strength, and the audacity to go and swim against the currents, to be willing to go against everyone around him. And although everyone has a certain view of life, he's willing to... That's Avraham. David, that was moved by a certain spirit, right? I mean, he wasn't just a warrior. He was Ruach Hashem was Behirbo. He wrote all of Sefer Tehillim, right? And that too is in our DNA, the ability to relate spiritually to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe, a mechanech, a paradigm teacher for all people, that too is our job as Jews to be Or Lagoyim. That is all in our DNA. Avraham, David, and Moshe. Atem Kruim Adam, it's uniquely in your DNA. You have the ability to do all of that. It's in your DNA. It doesn't mean necessarily that a Gentile can't, but it's in your DNA. Well, it's Abraham. Rooted in you. The power to go against the grain, the audacity, the strength. Okay. It says in that same pasuk, Adam ki akriv mikem korban la'Hashem, mina behema, mina bakar, u'mina tzon. All right, two more words on this pasuk. It's just interesting to note. How does one bring a korban? What's the process of bringing a korban? You go into your corral, you go into your barn, and you look at your cow, you look at your goat, you look at your sheep, and you say about that sheep, that's going to be Kodesh, that's a korban. And what happens now to that sheep?
It's Kodesh.
It's Hekdesh. You cannot use it for your own purposes anymore. Mm-hmm. It's been elevated. And that sheep will go to the Beis HaMikdash. And that sheep, Zam, will be sprinkled on the Mizbeach. It becomes Kodesh. If an animal can become Kodesh, then how much more so, this is in the Sefer Vekarat L'Shabbos Oneg, how much more so a person. If we have the ability, just by calling something Kadosh, to determine its fate now as being Kadosh, so how much more so for a human being when we are naturally Kadosh? Rav Cook explains that we are naturally Kadosh. Right? It's like a mashal of a helium balloon, I believe I've given once before. You have a balloon, you ever go to those bar of bat mitzvah parties, and why do the balloons stay on the table? Because they have that sandbag on the bottom that's usually covered with that like tinsel or like that silver glitter paper, whatever it is, and that's why it says on the table. But cut the sandbag off, and it's going to fly up. It's the same thing with a human being. A human being is natural kadosh. Sometimes we're held back by our own perceptions of ourselves, or by certain distractions from the world around us, by all the physical things that inundate our lives. But in truth, we're naturally Kaddish. And all we have to do is cut the string off, right? Cut the sandbag that holds us down, and we'll naturally flourish. We have the ability to be Makadish ourselves in a very, very serious way. If we can do it to a sheep, certainly we can do it to ourselves. All right, I'll give you an example of cutting off the sandbag. A couple of years ago, we had a Talmud in the yeshiva who very very much enjoyed music. He used to listen to music all the time. And in the summer then, and I assume that it's still the case now, I assume it's in fact only gotten larger. So there used to be concert scenes. Yeah, the concert scenes, they've changed since I was... It wasn't just like where you go to a concert at Madison Square Garden or at Nassau Coliseum, but it's like you camp out for like a week at a certain place, at a state park or at a beachfront or whatever it is, and different bands come and play, and over the course of so he had been WPLJ in New York 95.5. He was the 95th caller to call in, and he won himself a pair of tickets to one of these VIP parking areas in one of these concerts. Fish was the big headline band that was going to be playing there. And he was super excited. This was before he came Shana Aleph. And it was a concert was at the end of Shana Aleph. And over the course of the year, he began to think that maybe being in this concert scene is not going to be the best thing for his neshama, and is not really mesh with his desire and his natural tendency towards Kedusha. He was struggling with it. What should I do? But I really like fish, and I really like music, and he was struggling. And then finally, towards the end of the year, a little bit after Pesach, he put the tickets on sale in eBay. And, you know, I assume that he was paid handsomely for it, but he put the tickets on sale for eBay. That's cutting off the sandbag. He's naturally Kaddosh, and he made a commitment to that Kedusha. He let himself flourish and fly by that single act of posting the tickets on sale at eBay. And it had an effect. You know, it's unbelievable what that type of commitment did for him. Okay, again on that pasuk, min ha-be'ima, min ha-bakaru, min ha-tzon, Rav Simon in the Sefer Imri Baruch says that this pasuk, this whole idea of korbanos, demonstrates for us the tremendous love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us. The Ramban, famously, on this parak actually, in Pasuk Tet, talks about a korban. It's the famous discussion between the Rambam and the Ramban about what the idea is behind korbanos. And the Ramban at one point says that in truth, what should be is that a person that sinned, HaNefesh HaChotah Titamus, a person that sins, that betrayed, right, not only did he do a bad act vis-a-vis the sin, but he betrayed God. And for the betrayal of God, there's nothing short of death is going to be an acceptable punishment. And yet, comes along the Torah and says, Yavi Korban, let him bring a Korban, Ve'yit Kaper, and he'll be atoned, he'll be forgiven. And the Ramban says that that's what the person is supposed to think. As he brings the korban and he sees the animal being slaughtered, he should think of himself as being slaughtered. And he sees the blood, he should think of his blood being spilled. And when the flesh is burned, he should think that he deserves to be burned. And that is, but it's really not him. It's the korban that's being, it's the animal. And that demonstrates in a very real way how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Right? I don't want to end your life. I'm not interested in that. Let me take the animal instead. Right? Rather than take you, I'd rather take the animal. I'm not interested in your death. I'm not interested in that. I love you too much to see you getting hurt. The pasuk in Aseret HaDibros, right before Aseret HaDibros, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, go warn the nation not to get close to the mountain. Right? And he tells him, it's in Yutel Chafalef. Ha'ed ba'am pen yarsu al Hashem li'rod. Tell them not to run close. Right? Let them not come and see what's going to happen. If they will, v'nafal mimeno rav. Many will, right? Many might die. What's the many? What's the rav? Says Rashi, afilu hu yechidi chashuv lefanai rav. Even if it's just one individual. But one individual, in my eyes, says God, is like a rav, is like many. Each one is so precious to me that it's as if the entire nation would perish, right? That's what the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says. L'fichach nivra yechidi. A person was created alone. God didn't create all of us like He created cows a million at a time. Just one person demonstrates to us that each individual is significant. I'm sorry, you were saying?
It's like to God. That's magnificent because he takes people all the time, but in the end, he just also brings them even closer. Like the closest you can be is after you die.
Closest you can be is you can't. You mean your neshama wise and olam haba is close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
Yeah, so like, isn't his most ideal?
Clearly not his most ideal because he's made the world,
yeah.
And he could have just saved us the whole trouble. And okay, weiter. Going on to Perek Beis. In Perek Beis, we're introduced to a mincha. There's different types of korbanos that a person brings. There's animal korbanos, and then there's fowl korbanos, and then there's also something called a mincha. A mincha is a flower offering. And the flower offering pasuk starts like this. Perek Beis, pasuk Aleph. V'nefesh ki takriv korban mincha la Hashem. When the soul brings sacrifices, a korban mincha, a meal offering. So it tells you that it's comprised of solet, Shemen and Levona. It's comprised of the wheat, of the oil, and the Levona. Correct, of the incense, of the frankincense type of spice. But here too, like we had in Perek Aleph, we have a strange word. It doesn't say Ish ki yakriv korban mincha. It says Nefesh ki takriv korban mincha. Again, it's an odd choice of words. What does that mean, Nefesh ki takriv? So Gemara Menachos picks up on this. The Gemara Menachos says the following, that more often than not, who is going to be the one to bring a Korban Mincha? Right? It's going to be the poor person. Because the rich person is going to bring the calf, the rich person is going to bring the goat, he's going to bring the cow, he's got. The poor person that has nothing in his house, he's going to bring the Minchat Solet. And I'll take it a step further. The Chtam Sofer says even that we're not just talking about a Stam person. A poor person, we're talking about a person that subsides off of Peah, Leket, and Shechacha. There's Matnas Anim. When a person has a field, so he has a mitzvah to leave a corner of his field open so that the poor people can pick in the corner of the field. And when he finally gathers his crop, so anything that falls on the floor, he has to leave there, assuming it's Matnas, so that the poor people get. And anything that he forgot, he leaves there. So this person that's bringing the Minchas Ani, he's bringing whatever little grains he was able to gather from Peah, and whatever little olives he was able to gather from Leket and Shechacha, and he pressed it into oil. And whatever little he had that he was really doing for himself, he's bringing that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we live in the age of grandiose and great, and we would look and we would say, one person brings a large animal, and one person brings a meal offering, and if I didn't tell you the circumstance behind it, you would say, well, of course the animal is greater. But the answer is that's not true. An animal is not always greater. What determines the greatness of the korban is the intentions and the sacrifice that comes with it. For a rich person to give a korban is a big deal. But for a poor person to give a korban, even if it doesn't look as good, even if it's not a goat or a sheep or a cow, but so what? But he put his whole being, his whole fiber is in that mincha, is in that meal offering. And that in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a nefesh. As far as I'm concerned, you've sacrificed yourself entirely, and there is no beating that out. Right? Effort is oftentimes a lot more important than the result. You imagine, if you will, a couple that gets married. And when they get married, they're first struggling financially. So the ring that the girl gets, if she gets a ring, is some sort of cubic zirconium or very, very small diamond. $1,500 ring, $2,000 ring, whatever it is. And that $2,000 was like his whole life's savings, the man's whole life savings. And then, thank God, he gets a nice job. And over the course of time, he earns a nice living. And he begins to pull down a nice salary. $100,000 a year, $200,000, $500,000 a year. And then for his 20th year anniversary, he buys his wife a large, I don't know, whatever the anniversary is, when you're supposed to get gold, platinum, diamond, whatever it is. But for his 20th year anniversary, he buys his wife a large 3-carat diamond that cost him $20,000. What do you think is a greater expression of his love? The original $2,000 ring that he had to scrape together every last penny that he had in order to buy, or the $20,000 ring, which was really like a drop in the bucket 20 years later? I suspect that in the eyes of his wife, I hope, in the eyes of his wife, if she has all the faculties about her, then that original ring will be a lot more meaningful to her than the one that she gets for 20th. She might admire the one for the 20th, and she will like it, and she will wear it. But in terms of having a special place in her heart and demonstrating the love of her husband, she should hopefully recognize that the first ring demonstrates a lot greater love than the one that she got for her 20th anniversary. Because it was fraught with a lot more sacrifice, it was fraught with a lot more more pain. Okay. It's interesting. We keep on seeing in Korbanos the phrase Reyach Nichoach. One of the most dominating features of the Beis HaMikdash was the smell. Right? If you ever walk in the street around Second Day Yontif, for example, in Israel. Not Second Day Yontif. Yontif in Israel. There is no Second Day Yontif. So a lot of people they like to barbecue on Shabbos Day. Like they'll take like these hibachi little grills that just eventually burn out. So they'll light, and then 3 hours later will burn out. But during those 3 hours, there's like a great smell in the air, like you walk in all the houses, we do it also, and like you just like, you smell the meat cooking, and it's a nice barbecue. Sometimes on Friday you walk by people's houses, and it was like that in the Beis HaMikdash also. Smell was a very dominant feature. In fact, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in the fifth parak, says that one of the miracles of the Beis HaMikdash was that although the smell was so strong and so enticing, a pregnant woman who had such serious cravings would never fainted from the smell of, oh, you want that so bad. Oh. So that's that. There was a real, real smell in the air. And we've seen in the Torah also, Reach Nichoach, Reach Nichoach, Reach Nichoach. What exactly is the significance of the Reach Nichoach? So, Rav Hirsch gives the following beautiful explanation. So, the person is made up of five senses. And those five senses could really be divided up into two categories. On the one hand, you have sight and sound in one camp. And in the other camp, you have touch and taste. Right? Why do I divide it like that? Sight and sound happen from a distance. I don't have to be next to the stimulus in order to interact with it. I see Shragi all the way over there. I can even see Shragi if he was standing a mile away on the clear day. It's from a very distance. So to sound, I can hear you calling me from far away. On the other hand, the sense of touch, I have to interact directly with the stimulus. I'm touching it. The taste also, I put it inside my body. It's close to me. What is smell? So smell is somewhere in the middle of a day. Right? Smell is when you get a sample of what's coming. For example, you come home from work, right, and you're like, ah, we're having meatloaf for dinner? That's awesome. Right? You haven't quite tasted the meatloaf yet. Right? It's a sample of what's to come, but You're not far away from it either. Meaning it's somewhere in between. It's not quite the sight and sound, and it's not quite the touch and smell. Says Rav Samson of Rafael Hirsch that when we say that the korban is reyach nichoach, what we mean to suggest is that this korban is a smell, is a hint of what's to come. God, I am now turning towards you, and this is not the be-all and end-all of my relationship with you. I'm only going to build upon this. This is just a taste. It's going to be meatloaf for dinner. And now let's actually have the meatloaf. It's an approximation of what will be. That's what a korban is. That which I'm doing for you now, giving of the animal, that's not really what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. He wants my avodas Hashem. He doesn't want me to just give him an animal. And this korban is representative of my commitment to him, of what I will be doing with him, and the relationship that I will be building with him over the course of the future. Okay. It's interesting. In the Korban, every Korban, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph, right? Every Korban needs to have Yud Aleph and Yud Gimel. Let's start with Yud Gimel. Every korban needs to have salt. V'chol korban min chascha b'melach timlach v'lo tashbit melach b'it elokecha. Every korban mincha needs melach. And yet, there's also something that every korban must not have, and that's in Pasuk Yir Aleph. Chol sor chol dvash. It cannot have honey. Sor or dvash. Yes, melach, but no honey. Why not? What's the difference? So, I saw H.com. H.com has like a 1 minute vort. So this year's 1 minute vort. I think they have a collection, I think, over the past 2 years. So H.com, it's a good idea if you ever need a vort. You can go to one of the other places you can look at H.com. So they said the following. They said there's a difference between salt and honey. Both give flavor, but in a very, very fundamentally different way. Honey masks whatever natural flavors are in the dish, right? So you take, like, for example, you ever go to somebody's house and they're serving schnitzel, and you ask for ketchup, and then your parents kick you under the table, and they're like, "You didn't ask for ketchup. That's insulting." Why is it insulting? Because what you say, and listen, I dip my schnitzel into ketchup sometimes and French fries. But what you're saying is that, right? Yeah, the schnitzel is not good enough. You gotta, like, kind of like mask the taste with ketchup, and like you're more interested in the ketchup. Like, right, any real meat connoisseur will never have his meat with barbecue sauce or whatever, only with spices. That, right? What's the difference? Because the sauce, the honey, hides the taste, it masks it. Salt brings out the flavor. The spices bring out the natural flavors that are inside the meat, that are inside the, in this case it's a mincha, it's a flour offering. Salt brings out your the natural, honey masks. And that's the idea over here as well. That we have to, right, bring out the authentic us. When we bring a korban, when we sacrifice for HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our sacrifice. He doesn't want another, he doesn't want something that's fake. He wants it to be authentic. And what we have to realize, the lesson says, Eish.com, is that each one of us has something valuable to offer. We don't have to mask ourselves with honey. We have innately something unique that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. The proof is that we're here and we're existing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, it means that there's something that we can offer. The Chassidish Rebbeim are always very fond of quoting the teaching from the Zohar that the word Israel is an acronym. Yesh Shishim Ribo, right there, 600,000, Ribo Otiot, La Torah. There's 600,000 letters in the Torah. It's not really true, by the way. But what's the idea behind it? That there's 600,000 people that left Mitzrayim, and there are 600,000 letters to the Torah. Just like each letter of the Torah, if you think even one, the Sefer Torah is puzzle. So too in Klal Yisrael, if you're missing even one, it's not good. So just like in the Sefer Torah, if one letter is touching the other, right? It's possible. So too, if one person tries to encroach on another person, tries to just imitate another person, be him, instead of being himself, right? You ever heard the phrase, like, I want to be that guy? I wish I was that. When you find yourself saying, I want to be that guy, then you're violating this precept of melach instead of dvash. Don't worry about being that guy. Worry about being yourself. The famous teaching of the of Reb Zusha, and also of Reb Yisrael Salander, was said Bishma as well. Reb Zusha says, I'm not worried about if I get to Shemaim, they ask me why I wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu, and I'm not worried if they ask me why I wasn't Avraham, and who else did we have before, and Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm not worried about it. But I'm worried about is if they ask me why I wasn't Zusha. Right? That's what I fear. And we have to think about that as well. Sometimes we're too busy fantasizing, oh, if I had the midos of Rav Machlis, and I had the brains of this rabbi, of Rav Kuberman, and if I had the hasmada of Rav Siv, then I would be. Okay, but you're not meant to be them. You're meant to be yourself. Don't fantasize about what they have. Fantasize about what you have, and see how you can bring it out to light and make yourself a significant part of Klal Yisrael. Okay. Skipping towards the end of the Parsha, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Beis. Pasuk describes the following scenario to us. No, it's not Perek Dalet, Pasuk Beis. It is.
Asher
nasi yecheta v'asa achad mikol mitzvot Hashem alokav asher lo te'asena bishkaga v'ashem. If there should be a Nasi, right, one of the leaders of Klal Yisrael who did a Maisa Avera, a sin which should, right, an act which should not have been committed, Bishgaga, right, then he has to bring a Korban. Very interesting the way the Pasuk starts. Asher Nasi Yecheta. It doesn't say Ki Yechta Nasi. It doesn't say Nasi Asher Nasi Yecheta. Rashi says Asher Loshon Ashrei. Ashrei ador shanasi shelo neten lev lahavika para al shgagato. Praiseworthy is the generation whose leaders give heed and pay attention to the fact that they've made mistakes. Praiseworthy is the generation whose leaders are able to admit that they've made a mistake. All of us, it is impossible to live life without making mistakes. Right? Even at your age, I'm sure all of you have already feel like at some point in your life you've made a mistake. Certainly as you get older and go through life, it's impossible not to make some mistakes. But sometimes we try to sweep our mistakes under the carpet, pretend like they don't exist. But sometimes we don't man up to them. We don't fess up to our mistakes. We just kind of brush them or like try to blame it on somebody else, push the blame to somebody else. But that's a natural tendency. It's a defense mechanism because, you know, we don't want to admit that Chas V'Shalom we did something wrong. You know, even something simple like whatever it is. But a real person is able to admit their mistakes. Right? That's the first step in achieving greatness. It relates a little bit to the first Torah that we started with of learning Mikol Adam. A person that knows that he's fallible, a person that knows that he can make mistakes, is also a person that's going to be a lot more careful and a lot pay a lot more better attention to all of his actions and therefore ultimately achieve better results. When Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Brisker in Brisk, Rav Chaim Brisk was looking for a dayan in his town in Brisk to help him deal with the community matters and to paskin. So there were many people that tried out for the job, and he chose as the dayan a rav named Rav Simcha Rigger. He has actually a great grandson who's a famous personality in Israel today. Unfortunately, not yet from. He's a sports announcer. And he grew up in America. He's famous in Israel because he has like this thick American accent, and he's a sports announcer. Anyway, so he chose Rav Simcha Rigger. Why did he choose Rav Simcha Rigger? Because during the course of their conversations, when he was asking questions, twice Rav Simcha Rigger said, "I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know the answer to that," as opposed to everyone else that was not willing to admit that he didn't know the answer. And once there was a person that said, "I don't know the answer," that's when Rav Soloveitchik said, that's when Rechab said, he should be the dayan. Because when the person recognizes that he can't do it all by himself, that's when he's able to do it all, because there's other people that help him. Okay, there's many other examples of such behavior. We'll end here, and hopefully we'll get to the examples and a different idea. Shabbos, everyone.